Tonight, we unplug from the machine. It's old school UFOs all the time right here on Coast to Coast AM. Scientists are on the verge of creating an emotional computer. The AI could think like a person and bond with humans within years. It's called Virtual Actor, and it's expected online within the next year and a half. The machine will be used to play the role of a person and set its own goals, and it will understand the context of your conversation and keep up with your events. Check it out right now over at Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight is the legend, Clifford Stone. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. Our guest tonight is Clifford Stone, and we are discussing not only ET technology, hybrid technology, how they get here, what that technology is, how we are tracking them, but also internationally and how the Russians are tracking those objects, and are they tracking the same thing? Our guest tonight is Clifford Stone. And Clifford, we're going old school tonight, so let's head to the phones and take a couple of questions. Let's go to Wildcard and Eric. Welcome to Coast. You're up next, Eric.
Hi, Jimmy. Hi, Clifford. How are you, Clifford?
Fine. Thank you, sir.
I'm really grateful to speak to you. I've got a couple of questions. Hopefully, I can ask them. One question has to do with all that you've experienced as an observer listening to you. I'm wondering, do you feel that you might be, and don't take offense to this, but you're a form of ET, maybe human hybrid DNA within you as you live now?
Well, with me, I don't think so, but I keep an open mind about that. Let me just put it in just simple layman terms. There are many times I feel like I don't belong. I feel that I'm an outsider observing the things that are going on in this world. And armed with the compassion for all of humanity. Yet I can tell you, I was born at Mercy Hospital around 5:30 in the morning, January 2nd, 1949. I got a birth certificate for that. I knew my mom and dad. It's a hard hard situation to really put your finger on. Now, I had family members that were very much involved in the realm of spiritualism. But I can tell you a lot of times spiritualism crosses over into the reality of our visitors. So, you know, was there something in the past that even before I was born that occurred with some of my family members? It could be. But I hope that answers your question.
It does. I guess the only way you might have a better clue is if you have some sort of DNA testing, but I don't even know if that would tell you.
Wait, and you said he had a second question, Eric.
Was when you first got to see the book where you saw the 57, I think you said 57 races of ETs, can you kind of recall when that was and who it was and how that came to be? That must have been a mind-blowing experience for you.
Oh, it was. As a matter of fact, we were investigating situations there in Kentucky, and this was in October of 73, the first time I ever saw it. And they went ahead, let me see it, and very, you know, matter of fact, they said, okay, you know, this right here gives us a little glimpse into the various species that we may come across. And, you know, I actually said at one time, can I keep it? And they just laughed and said, no, we don't think that's a good idea. And that, actually, that's when I first learned that there was a 70% probability that I would never, ever talk about the events in my life to anyone outside of officialdom. And there was 30% that there may be certain things that happen in my life that would make me want to start to talk. And it, the way they broke it down finally, there was something like a 7% probability that I would wind up coming out and talking about the events of my life.
Thank you for the call, Eric. And those are two very excellent questions. And with your follow-up to that, Clifford, where the 70% number comes in, how did you get past the 70% to speak to me right now on Coast?
Being a very scared person.
Right.
But I had to overcome my fears because I saw so many other people hurting. I'm, like I said earlier, I know people who took their lives, and that bothered me. And I figured whatever happened to me, so be it. I had to come out to try to help others, whether they decided they wanted to talk or not. I had to go ahead and let it be known that these people aren't crazy, that things really are happening in their lives.
Right.
And like with me saying, you know, the entity that's following me, then this young lady that came out and talked, I've never met her. But when we come across people who come out and say, hey, you know, I have this entity that keeps appearing to me, it's like they're a lifelong partner with me and something I don't fully understand. We need to be supportive of these people.
Right.
Because there's literally thousands of people out there. I know of me coming out, and I know of this young lady. And beyond that, I don't know anyone else that has come out and started to talk about having these ongoing contacts and that they're being followed throughout life.
Right.
So, you know, when they do come out, keep an open mind, but be supportive of these people because it's a very difficult decision that they have to make to come out and talk about it. But ultimately, it helps others. On a side note to that, we were in one craft, and I saw this real shiny, almost self-luminous piece of debris, for lack of a better term, in this little crevice on board one of the ships. I went ahead, and I took a paper clip and tried to put it back there to try to pulled out whatever it was, and when I did that, I turned the paper clip a little, then there was a vibration starting inside the craft. Standing to my right was a young soldier, and he went ahead and he asked me, he says, what happens now, Sarge? And I went ahead and I said, I don't have the foggiest idea.
Wow.
And the point I'm trying to make with this story right here is that I would have probably have never wrote a book if it wasn't for Paula coming in, Paula Harris.
Right.
Coming in and talking to me and asking me questions and recording them. And she helped, you know, get that book out. One day I got a call. And it was from that young soldier that was on my right side. And he went ahead and he said, you know, I read your book and I want to know if you remember me. And first, you know, is it a kook call or is this a real person?
Right.
And he went ahead and he said, you know, I was with you on a ship. And I said, okay. And he told me, related that incident to me. Well, I'd never told no one about that.
With the paper clip.
Right. And he said, I was standing to your right. And when you turned that, it started to vibrate. And I asked you, what happens next? And you said, and do you remember what you said? And I said, yes. And we both together said the same thing. Then I went ahead and I heard this gasping in the background. I heard this woman say, oh my God, you've been telling us the truth. This young soldier wound up getting married, had a family of his own, He told his family, and of course his family said, you know, you can tell us about this, but don't tell other people. They'll think you're crazy. And he made it clear to me he didn't want to come out, but he was thankful the book was out there, because now his family knew that he actually had this experience, that the call to me was simply to have his family there and have the confirmation by me confirming it.
How does that make you feel?
Oh, that made me feel good.
Absolutely.
I've seen, you know, a lot of people hurt, and that bothers me, knowing that there are people hurt. And when people go ahead and have these experiences, I can remember the faces of some of the soldiers trying to understand what was going on, because their lives changed forever because they were involved, maybe in just one incident.
Well, that's exactly right, Clifford. And I personally have gone through that. And I decided to throw caution to the wind and just come forward and speak, not only on Coast, but on Fade to Black and other appearances where I don't care anymore. I saw what I saw. Nobody's going to change that. But I will say this, at that moment, when you have a life-changing event like what happened to me, I literally had to bend over and put my hands on my knees and take a big, deep breath, close my eyes and go, okay, is this really, really happening right now? But it did. And by not speaking about it, and I'm talking about everybody out there who has witnessed something or has had made contact in any way, by not talking about it, you're hurting everybody else. You need to come forward and speak. Talk to Clifford. Talk to me. Call into the show. Write something. Talk to your friends, your neighbors. Speak about it. Keeping it inside is not doing any good. And you need to not worry about what your neighbor thinks. You know, maybe your boss at work, maybe you don't need to talk to him about it. But you certainly should talk about it. And I don't care. And I will always have an open mind when it comes to this.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole situation is, if you keep it bottled up, it eats at you every day. And, you know, for the longest time, I didn't tell my family about what I was doing. My granddaughter, it took 30 years to get a daughter of mine out of Vietnam. And, of course, when she got here, she had already been married and had three children. And one day my granddaughter asked me about the UFOs. And I went ahead and told her. Then she actually got to the point where she told me she did not want anything like that to ever happen to her. And I remember telling her, I said, you know, I don't think you have to worry about it, honey. I think it only happens to one person in the family at a time, okay?
That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know whether she'd admit to it now, but I can tell you that to confirm that her grandfather wasn't crazy, one night something happened at her home. A bright light lit up the entire inside of the house. And I remember she telling me about her seeing it, her mother saw it, but her two brothers and father slept all the way through it. Then when the light went out, you know, everybody got up and they went out to look outside to see if there was a helicopter flying overhead that could have done it, but no one heard a helicopter. Also, it was like the light was inside the house and not like it was a spotlight from a helicopter being shined in, coming in through the blinds or anything like that.
Right.
So,
well, who did she call?
Well, she called Grandpa.
She called Grandpa.
So, and, you know, the one thing that a lot of people don't, and I get emotional when I talk about it, but when you'd go out on a mission, you'd grab that BA-50 bag, and, you know, we were the children, we do very little about what we were doing. and you know, you'd kiss your wife goodbye, kiss the good kids goodbye, and you went out the door. And you wasn't for sure that you would be coming back home, because accidents did happen. And some people didn't come back home. But we always had cover stories, training accidents.
Right.
Things of this sort.
And when
we were doing the interfacing, and you're familiar, and I don't want to go into it too much, but you're familiar with the one that I helped escape there at Fort Belvoir.
That's right.
That creature there, I mean, when he looked up and said, "I am afraid," and I mean, that's almost verbatim. I could pick it up in my mind. It was, you know, what was being said, but I also felt the emotions that that entity was transmitting to me. They have families. He was worried about not seeing his family again, but the primary concern he had was for our safety, because his people was coming to get him. And of course, the technology, while they would try not to hurt no one in extracting him, the technology that they would use in inside the building could cause loss of life to some of us, and he did not want that to happen.
And he knew what could and what was about to happen.
Oh yeah,
right.
And when we went out and I got him through the fence, you know, when you have people coming up behind you and you hear them lock and loading their M16s,
right,
that is a deafening sound. I mean, it's very loud. And I was waiting, you know, for someone to pull the trigger. For I thought for sure I was going to die that night.
Do you think they would have? Do you think they would have shot you first, or ET?
I think they would have probably have tried to shoot the ET, but there would not be any concern about shooting me.
Right.
And the reason I state that, I know, and some of the people when I was, the first time I went to Germany, they noticed that I really didn't like to talk about the subject, but they also knew I got mail dealing with UFOs from Washington, and I had strange visitors within my unit that would come to visit me. And I'd have to go on these missions whether I wanted to go on them or not.
Well, let's follow up on that right after the break. Our guest tonight is Clifford Stone. We're going old school UFO tonight, and I have got all of your calls backed up here, and we're going to do all of that next. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. It is an old school UFO type of show tonight. Our guest is Clifford Stone, and we're taking your calls next. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight is the legend, Clifford Stone. Cliff, when I say legend like that, you understand the respect when I say that, don't you?
Yes, sir, but oh. I feel like I'm just a common, everyday person.
I understand that, but the respect is there. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to west of the Rockies, Wayne. You've been hanging on there for a while. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're up.
Good evening, gentlemen, Mr. Stone and Mr. Church. I'm wondering about your retrieval training, and were they still using the magic manual for that? And if they were, what edition? Because I downloaded in 1999, I downloaded the first edition at a public library when the printers were at the station. And within 15 minutes, I was 5 miles from the Army Air Force Base. Within 15 minutes, there were 15 to 20 military guys walking around the library.
Of course there was, Wayne. Wayne, you've got a voice for broadcast. I hope you're planning on radio in the future. Hey, so Clifford, when you did do the retrieval, what manual were you using?
Essentially, there was no manual for the individuals, to include myself, but they had a manual, and I'll tell you right now, the people who put it out was going back to that office within the CIA, and I just found this out recently, what they call the Office of Special Operations. They were the ones that put out the medical manual. They actually were the ones that also chose which, I don't know, that's like aerospace doctor, because they were like people that like flight surgeons, things of this sort that they utilized. Not just go ahead and just pick any doctors. But these people, and they were the medical team that they would utilize. Normally you would have two teams that would be coming in, A team and B team. And I'll say that they didn't you don't reinvent the wheel. If it works well, that's what you utilize. So, you know, every soldier that was out there knew his job, and that was the mission that was attached to him. It was just that we were literally involved in recovering something that was totally out of this world. The same procedure, like in January 1962, a U-2 crashed there in Nevada. The same procedure in recovering UFOs is the same procedure they used there in recovering that crash U-2. They went ahead and gave a cover story that it was an experimental aircraft that crashed, but in reality, we had already been flying U-2s and used them on missions already by that time. We went out, we located the crash site. They sent two teams out at that time. Each team consisted of about 30 men each. They located the crash. They got a low boy in there, a tractor trailer with a low boy, put all the debris from the crash on the back of the low boy. They waited till nightfall. Then they took it on back from the crash site, taking it down the highway, having chase cars that was behind the low boy, checking to see if any type of traffic was trying to follow that low boy. And also they had a helicopter in the air to try to see if anyone was following it. And I'll tell you right now, the area where it was taken, and I have documentation to prove this, they took it back to Area 51, and they had a road that didn't look like a road, that they went down that road, and they made sure no one was following them when they turned down that road to take it to whatever site there in Area 51 they were taking it back to. When it comes to UFO crashes, I'd be speculating if I'd say, okay, they took them to Area 51 or anything like that. I will tell you this much. People need to look closer at Edwards Air Force Base as opposed to Area 51.
Why is that?
Edwards Air Force Base has been involved for the longest of time, going all the way back to the early 50s with UFOs.
And also it's got an accessible location too as well. You can hit it from any direction.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Can I share with you some stories that I've seen on UFOs? Actually, a documentary that showed Space Command down in Boulder, Colorado, where they actually were able to go inside and they showed the board and what some of the things stood for on the board, like the SC abbreviation for spacecraft and the SJ for space junk, and then they had AFC, alternate spacecraft. And I think it was from our, you know, ground right on up to 100 or 200 miles on up, and a 360-degree panorama all around the room of everything that was in the sky.
Sure.
And there weren't just two or three alternate spacecraft. There were dozens of them.
Right, right.
Board.
Yeah.
And that amazed me. And then in 1966, I'd just gotten out of the Air Force. I was going to go on a mountain hiking trip with a buddy of mine. He chickened out at the last minute. I went up by myself, a 7-mile hike up to the lake. The lake was frozen over. There was a small piece of ground that was all clear that I put my sleeping bag out on, didn't have a tent or anything. It was late in April or May of 66. And that night, there was 15 or 20 or maybe even more wild mountain sheep in that area where I was trying to sleep. And they would stomp around all night long, you know, and it just bugged the you-know-what out of me. And I'd stick my head out and yell and scream, and then they'd kind of take off for a minute, and then they'd come around. Well, years later, I figured out why. You know what else was coming out at that time of the year?
What's that?
Bears.
Of course.
They were protecting me from the bears. And then when I got down to the road, or down to the rough road that took me down the mountain, down to the main road, I got down to the main road, because I hadn't slept all night, and I had the 7-mile hike down, I was so tired that within about 5 minutes or less, I fell asleep at the wheel. And thank God that was the first year they had the little speed bumps on the road, you know, the little round things.
Right.
And my tire went bump, bump, bump. I said, Jesus, you're going to have to save me and get me out of this. In less than 30 seconds, there was two passengers or hitchhikers on the road. I picked them up. They got in the backseat, both of them, which is kind of unusual, but I guess they were buddies or whatever. So, you know, they kept me awake and alive. I can't remember exactly what we talked about, you know, but I had this bumper sticker on my car that said, in case of rapture, this car will have no driver. So anyway, they said, where are you going? I said, I'm going into Olympia. I got into the flatlands of Olympia, the farmland, and the highway was only 10 feet or 12 feet elevated off of the farmland, all clear area. I said, where do you guys want to be let out? And they said, oh, right here would be fine. Now, this wasn't at any exit or entrance or anything. I said, okay. You know, so I let them out. It turned out it was early. There was no traffic. I pulled out, looked back to wave goodbye. They weren't there.
They were gone. Thank you for the phone call, Wayne.
You bet.
Really appreciate it. And, yeah, and Clifford, that's kind of funny when you have synchronicities like that happen and you don't understand until much later how important they are. I'm referring to picking up a couple of hitchhikers when you needed to stay awake and then they want to be dropped off somewhere that's strange and you turn around and they're gone. This is not the first time I've heard a story like this. I find it very interesting.
I'll pass one on to you about was working before I retired. This is back in the late 90s, within a couple years after my son passed away. When I got off work, it may be 2-3 in the morning, and I'd go down this dirt road alongside of the cemetery, park my car, go over to where they had a place where I could walk over the fence line, and go back there to visit my son's grave. And every night when I'd go there to park, I had this woman, when she was dressed in white and almost looked like a nun, and I never got her name, but she'd always have a cup of coffee there waiting for me.
Okay.
And it was always hot. And I was always wondering, how did she know what time I would be there, where the coffee would always be hot. And she'd always tell me, I'll watch your car. But when I go back to the car, the woman wouldn't be there. I went ahead and I talked to some of the people that lived around there, thinking, okay, maybe this lady's from the Middle East or something. And no one knew anything about this woman. And, you know, the only time I ever would see her is like, at night when I would go there, but she would always meet me there at the car. And I, you know, the area there was several hundred feet, but I mean, as soon as I got, she'd be right there. And things like that happen.
Yeah, and nobody saw her.
No one saw her.
Wow, that's interesting. Let's go to Daniel in Fresno on the first time caller line. Daniel, you're up next on Coast. Daniel? 3, 2, 1. All right. I guess Daniel's not there. Let's go to Rebecca in Spring Valley, California, in Wild Card. Rebecca, welcome to Coast.
Hi, Jimmy. Hi, Mr. Stone. I'm really enjoying the show. I am a hybrid. I've known this since I was born. I've got some information about how the ETs travel. It's totally through telepathy. It's everything that we think, and they train me to think this way, immediately transfers you to wherever you want to go. There are more than 11 dimensions, by far more. But I've been flying UFOs for 29 years. They're training me.
Well, Rebecca, at this point, I would normally say, do you have a question for Clifford? I think Clifford has got a couple of questions for you. Clifford?
Sure.
I couldn't hear everything she was saying, but I would like to reiterate on something she was saying about more than 11 dimensions.
Yes.
In all probability, it very well could be. And there could be many more. But when I refer to 11 dimensions, I'm referring to the fact that 11 dimensions that we are aware of.
Sure.
And so, yes, there could be many more. And, you know, when we finally come out and say that UFOs exist and they're interplanetary, that's not the end of the story. Because we don't only have visitors that are interplanetary. We have visitors that are multidimensional.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, they've warned me about others. And I seem to be protected from them because I haven't encountered them. I've heard about them on Coast.
Rebecca, let me ask you this really quick. Can you walk down the street as a hybrid and nobody else would know? Rebecca, are you there? I think we lost Rebecca. Okay, interesting. Let's go to Jim in Kansas City. Jim, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, Jimmy. Good to hear you on there. And Clifford, I'd like to ask you a question, sir, if I could. I know a few months ago on Coast to Coast, they did mention something about the Cape Girardeau crash that had happened about 5 years prior to Roswell. Vice President Truman had come down, and evidently there were two or three entities that were in that crash. One survived. There's a photo of a pastor or a doctor or something. They had called out to the rural areas of Cape Girardeau.
That's right.
Do you have any information on that? I mean, there seems to be very little on that, and it's surprising to me that it hasn't gotten more exposure in the UFO community. And also, one other question, with your interaction with these entities and what you know or what you have gathered from your research, how does it play into the whole God thing, creation, intelligent design? What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, okay. The case you're talking about, I know very little about. But I can tell you that there have been crashes that have occurred, I mean, you know, they're not gods, and the technology they use is just that, technology. Therefore, they have accidents. And every now and then, when I say we, I'm talking about nations on the face of the earth, are capable of shooting them down. But that's when they don't have their, and I hate to use the term shield, but that's the best term I can use, when they don't have their protector shields up. And from time to time, that happens. But as far as God, if you were to ask them, they would tell you that which you call God exists. We cannot tell you which religion is true and correct. I do know that I once asked our visitors, and I published this before, I know the time that my son was killed. I was one of the first people up there when the accident occurred. I was working security there at the mall, and it happened right outside the mall. But I knew if I could go back 15 minutes early, I can stop the crash from happening. And they went in to explain to me why, you know, you can't go back and do that because you create another parallel universe in which whatever didn't happen as a result of that is in that parallel universe. But yeah. You're in this space-time continuum, and I don't like that term, but that's the only term I can use. So the reality is, in the time frame I must be in, I would be here and my son would still be dead.
Right.
And they went ahead and explained to me that there's a barrier to stop you from doing that. And one question even they couldn't answer, if people could go back and change time, there'd be all these parallel universes that would be created. So, you know, you may find yourself actually existing in 10, 15, 20 parallel universes. Their big question was, if you exist in all those parallel universes, do you share the same soul?
Wow.
Wow, that's cool.
That I've always, you know, been concerned about and wondered about. But they also went ahead and they let me see my son that night. They told me, you know, we'll let you visit with your son.
Let me jump in really quick, Clifford, and say thank you, Jim, for that phone call. Excellent phone call. Our guest tonight is Clifford Stone. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. More with Clifford right after the break and your calls. This is Coast to Coast.